Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome to Season 2, Episode 6 of They Walk Among Us, a podcast dedicated to UK true crime. Listener caution is advised, as this episode contains adult themes and descriptions that some listeners may find distressing. Alan Hopkinson is a former member of Mensa with an IQ of 159. He was a computer programmer and had served in the Royal Air Force. At the time of his arrest, he was middle-aged with salt and pepper hair and a moustache. Nothing about him stands out. You could pass him on the street and not take notice. Alan Hopkinson is also highly dangerous. Detective Constable Tina Burney of the Sussex Police Child Protection Team said, "I've dealt with many paedophiles over a lot of years, and this is the most dangerous paedophile that I've come across. He is highly intelligent, very educated, and is very, very charming. That is how he manages to manipulate people, and he is very good at that." The danger Alan Hopkinson poses is due to his obsession with young girls. Alan was born in the seaside town of Eastbourne on the south coast of England during June 1953. He was the only child of middle-class parents James and Daphne Hopkinson. The family moved to Zimbabwe, South Africa in 1957 when Alan was 4 years old. He did well in school, and upon leaving the Churchill High School for Boys, he obtained 6 O-levels and 3 higher exams. He took a series of office admin jobs, but never settled in one place. Alan reluctantly served in the Air Force as part of national service, and at 23 he returned to London to live with relatives in Sidcup. Again, never settling in one job, he had various positions as a manual labourer and as an office worker. In the early 1980s, he found something he enjoyed when he started a computer programming course. But despite Alan's new interest, this didn't help him stick to a job. He moved from position to position, but never stayed long. Alan wasn't socially awkward, but he had no friends. When his parents left South Africa in 1987 to move to Maidstone in Kent, Alan moved in with them. Some reports say that he began a relationship with his cousin Jean Taylor, and she also moved into his parents' home. But the relationship didn't last, and Jean left. People in the area were uncomfortable around Alan. A former neighbour, Gloria Clout, recalls, "We used to call him the pervert." You'd be out in the garden pegging out the washing, and there would be a whistle. By instinct, you'd look up, and he would be standing in the upstairs window. He'd have nothing on. As time went by, his behaviour became more disturbing. He lost a considerable amount of weight and penned a diary called The Evil Rapist. In July 1990, he tried to abduct an 18-year-old French student who was hitchhiking. He attempted to drag her into his car at knife point, but thankfully she managed to escape. Only a few weeks later, he kidnapped and assaulted an 11-year-old girl. He grabbed her from behind when she walked home from school, bundling her into the boot of his car. He drove the young girl to a nearby woods and sexually assaulted her at knife point. He then took her back to his parents before locking her in a tiny cupboard. The girl was found 3 hours later, after a father of one of the pupils at the girls' school took down Alan's number plate earlier that day, as he felt Alan was acting suspiciously outside. DCI David Stevens, who led the investigation, commented, "We found the girl in the cupboard. She was terrified. She was lucky we found her so quickly." Alan's home was searched by a team of police officers. Stacks of pornography were found, and DCI Stevens discovered a disturbing 6-page story typed on Alan's computer, which described how a man abducted a girl and then attacked her. The story did not have an ending. At Maidstone Crown Court, in May 1991, he was sentenced to 7 years for kidnapping. The court was aware that he'd sexually assaulted the young girl. They were also aware of the kidnap attempt of the French student, but he was never charged with these offences. In prison, unbeknownst to officers who thought he was a model inmate, Alan Hopkinson had been drawing maps of schools in the Eastbourne district. He marked the map with children's names and pasted photographs which he carefully cut out of local newspapers. As part of his treatment, he wrote another book called Foiling the Beast. In 25 chapters, it laid out in lurid detail why some men dreamt of abusing little girls. After serving 4 years, on May 28, 1995, Alan Hopkinson was released on license. As he hadn't been charged with any sex offences, a supervision order was only put in place for 6 months, and there was no sex offenders registry in place at that time. He moved to a rundown flat on Kingfisher Drive in Eastbourne, located above Langley Shopping Centre. He saw the heavy foot traffic outside his home as an opportunity to select and befriend young girls at the local arcade. He brought them sweets and offered them a place to go to watch videos. Esther Adams was Alan's next-door neighbour when she was a teenager, and recalls he used to have lots of children coming round to visit all the time. It was always the same bunch. They were from the local school. One used to wear a uniform. They would come at all hours. They seemed to think of him as a father figure. He would buy them sweets, then they would come back and make cookies. One night, 3 girls came round and said, "Could I hand a letter to Alan?" There was an envelope with 2 hearts in the corners and Alan in the middle. It made me feel sick. Alan raised no suspicions at first. Shoppers would come and go, and he told shopkeepers that he had a family of his own. About a year after he had first moved to the flat, a mother of one of the girls Alan had been grooming noticed her daughter had become withdrawn. She found out the man her child had been visiting did not have children and in fact lived alone, so she called the police. Officers visited the flat and warned Alan that his relationship with the girls was inappropriate, and a child protection team met Alan to inform him about the complaint. Officers began an investigation immediately and spoke to scores of children. One claimed he had abused her. The visit sparked a panic in Alan. He knew after the authorities had visited, his time was short and it wouldn't be long before he was arrested. Police tried to secure a court order to keep him away from children, but the process of gathering evidence to ensure prosecution was slow, and Alan Hopkinson struck. Charlene Lunnon was 10 years old in 1999. Butch had just moved to St Leonard's-on-Sea in Sussex. Charlene had been living with her auntie Vera and uncle Harry after she had been placed in foster care. Her mother had been addicted to heroin and couldn't take care of Charlene. She had got clean and wanted to gain custody of her daughter, but had relapsed and unfortunately died of an overdose. Charlene hadn't bonded with her father in her formative years, as he had also been addicted to heroin when she was younger, but he turned his life around, so much so that he was now working as a drugs counsellor and Charlene would be moving in with him. She was excited about the prospect of living with her father Keith, his wife Philomena, and her new stepsister in Hastings, and was also looking forward to starting at a new school. On Charlene's first day, a girl called Lisa befriended her after she had asked to borrow Lisa's Spice Girls pencil sharpener. They had fun in the playground at lunchtime, and after school that day, Lisa went to play at Charlene's, which was only one street away from her home. The two 10-year-old girls formed a bond and quickly became inseparable. Lisa Hoodless lived with her mother, father, and three siblings in a house above her grandfather's flat. Her father worked as a gardener, planting the arrangements at the seafront, and Lisa's mother worked at home, taking care of the four children. After school, Lisa would go downstairs, asking her grandfather to help with her homework, as he was a retired teacher. In time, both sets of parents agreed to let the girls walk to school together, as the route was safe and free of any major roads. It only took 5 minutes in a quiet, low-crime area.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. HelloFresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
On Tuesday, January 19th, 1999, Charlene and Lisa were running late for school, so decided it would be quicker to take a shortcut down Cornfield Terrace, a one-way street. The street, lined with houses, was quiet, but not secluded. The girls were walking along, giggling and messing around. Rubbish sacks had been torn, and the contents of food waste covered the floor. Charlene pushed Lisa out of the way before she stepped in it, but Lisa fell into the road, narrowly missing an oncoming car. The driver of the car stopped his blue Vauxhall Corsa, got out, and apologised. Alan Hopkinson, who was aged 46 at the time, had been using his homemade school map that morning to trawl the area. He had been following Lisa, since she left her house that morning. He watched her pick up sweets from the garage and saw her taking a shortcut through a one-way street. Alan apologized to Lisa, but as he did so, he put his hand around her mouth, picking her up, and he put her in the boot of his car. Charlene was petrified as she looked at Lisa. Her face was bright red from screaming. She was terrified and didn't know what to do. Charlene was told to get in the boot with Lisa. No one witnessed the abduction. Lisa was crying, and Charlene was trying to comfort her by stroking her hair and singing to her. The car stopped after only a few miles on a coastal road in a secluded lay-by. Charlene was then removed from the boot. She could hear the hum of cars and see a field, but she had no idea where she was. Lisa was left, too panicked to hear anything. The thought of why me and why is this happening kept turning in her mind. Alan sat Charlene on his lap in the back of the car and started to calmly ask her questions, like what was her favourite colour, what was her favourite food, who did she live with, did she like school? After quietly answering all of his questions, Charlene was told she was a good girl. Alan made an admission to the terrified youngster that he'd kidnapped a girl once before for 3 hours and nearly got lots of money, but he was caught and had to go to prison. So this time, he said, I'm going to make sure it works. Charlene asked to go back in the boot with Lisa, as she could hear her cries for help. Alan put her back in the boot and said he didn't want to hurt them as long as someone paid a ransom. He got in the car and drove the 17 miles to Eastbourne. The girls' absence from school was not followed up by a phone call to their families. As far as they knew, Charlene and Lisa had arrived at school like any other day. The school assumed that their families were aware of their absence. Arriving at the underground car park to his flat, Adam removed Lisa from the boot and made her get into a large gym bag. She started to panic as she believed she wouldn't be able to breathe in the zipped bag. He calmly assured her it would be a minute, just until they got into his flat. He told Charlene he was going to come and get her next. When Alan was gone, Charlene took the opportunity to scream, shout, and kick the boot, but no one came. Alan returned and attempted to place her in the same black gym bag, but she was too big to fit inside. He decided to wrap her in bin bags, making holes for her nose and mouth, and lifted her up the communal stairs to his flat. No one saw either child enter his property. Alan's flat was small. It contained a sofa, a single bed, and was packed with his belongings. The light was dim, and the brown sofa, carpets, and curtains looked to be heavily worn. He unwrapped Charlene and led both girls to a window with its curtains drawn. As he opened them, the girls noticed they were several floors up. Alan let them know they would never be able to escape from the window because if they jumped from that height, they would break their legs. Alan turned his focus to Charlene and made her go into the bedroom. Every school day, at 3:15 p.m., Lisa's mum Julie went to collect her children from school with her friend Elisam. They waited for Charlene and Lisa at the school gates for 10 minutes before Julie asked the class teacher where the girls were. This was the first time someone realised the girls were missing. Julie thought the girls were playing truant and had likely spent the day loitering around the shops but were now too scared to come home and explain themselves. She sat waiting by a front window, but when the clock turned 5, and the girls hadn't returned, she began to worry. Philomena, Charlene's stepmother, called Charlene's father Keith at work to let him know what was going on. The girls now hadn't been seen in over 8 hours. When their friends mentioned they hadn't seen the girls, Keith told Philomena to call the police straight away and he rushed home. The girls' bedrooms and homes were searched, and the families of the missing 10-year-olds were now petrified of what might have happened. Charlene's father went out in his car, searching the streets hoping he would see them, but felt useless when he had to return home to let the police take over the search. Officers went door to door, checking every address near the school, and sniffer dogs were employed to search gardens and hedgerows. But by the early hours of the morning, they still had no information to lead them to Lisa and Charlene. 17 miles away, Lisa and Charlene lay on a sofa, under a blanket in a pair of old musty t-shirts they were given to wear. Charlene was kicking Lisa, begging her to stay awake, but Lisa was so exhausted she could barely keep her eyes open. Alan Hopkinson didn't go to bed. He just kept pacing around the small flat. He would intermittently stop and just stare at the girls. On January 20th, Charlene and Lisa had been missing for over 24 hours. The national media were alerted, and an appeal was made by their families. Over 70 police officers combed the area looking for any trace of the missing 10-year-olds. Keith, Charlene's father, had a bad feeling, and he was giving up hope that his daughter would ever be found. Because it was so unusual for two girls to go missing, police were hoping they had just decided to go on an adventure together. School friends told the police that Charlene and Lisa had often talked about running away to London to visit Charlene's mum's grave, so police expanded the search. It was unlikely the girls ever said this. Charlene's mum didn't have a grave. However, some of Charlene's family still live there. Her sister Rose, who lived in London, was hoping she was making her way there, but thought it improbable as the girls were too young to know the route. Missing posters were placed in train stations along the journey, hoping the girls would be spotted leaving a train. Calls flooded a helpline that had been set up, but no solid leads were uncovered. 2 days after their capture, Alan Hopkinson, who had allowed the girls to watch the news footage of their disappearance, cruelly told Charlene and Lisa that their families wouldn't pay the ransom because they didn't want them back. The mental and physical abuse continued. To keep them quiet, he told them that if they screamed or tried to escape, the man next door would kill them, and he was much nastier than Alan was. But much to their relief, as evening approached, Alan spoke to the girls and told them they would finally be going home. He carried them the way they had arrived, in a sports bag and wrapped in black sacks, placing the girls in the boot of his car. When it was dark, he stopped the car and brought the girls sausage and chips. Unable to eat, as the girls just wanted to go home, Alan placed them back in the boot. As the car started, they realised he wasn't driving towards Hastings, and panic once again set in. Alan pretended he was lost, driving down a narrow road, but eventually stopped on a grass verge. He had driven them to a famous suicide spot on Beachy Head. People had thrown themselves from the 540-foot white cliffs onto the rocks below. He dragged the girls to the edge, threatening to throw them off, but at the last second, he changed his mind, declaring that he needed them for just one more day. He put them back in the boot of his car and drove to his parents' home. The Hopkinsons were away in Australia for 2 months, so he had full reign of the property. He abused the girls again before returning them to his flat. The police decided it was time to talk to the families to deliver some heart-wrenching news. Given the amount of time that had elapsed, and with no new information or sightings, they feared for the safety of the girls. The investigation was turning from a missing persons to a murder inquiry. On January 22nd, 3 days since the two girls had disappeared, the search was winding down, but another police force investigation was heating up. Finally, after 3 weeks, enough evidence had been collected to arrest Alan Hopkinson for the rape of a minor. The girls had been allowed to top and tail in a single bed that night. They awoke to silence. Alan Hopkinson had gone to collect his parents from the airport. Adrenaline kicked in, and Charlene and Lisa looked for an escape. The handle of the front door had been removed from the inside, leaving the bolted door impossible to open. As they were desperately searching for a way out, they stumbled across magazine cuttings of children's pictures, along with a list of children's names and the details of the torture and abuse they had suffered. The girls were trapped. Deflated, they returned to bed just in time to see the door swing open. "Time to get up, girls. Let's see what they are saying about you on the news this morning," said Alan, as he switched on the TV. The girls' pictures appeared on the 9 a.m. news, and their hearts plummeted when the headline read, "Hopes are fading of finding the missing girls alive." From out of nowhere, they were interrupted by a loud knocking on the front door. No one had visited for the last 3 days, so the girls huddled against the wall, wrapped in a dirty quilt, fearing who it could be. Too scared to talk or scream, the girls sat there in silence. Alan paced back and forth, saying, "What do I do? What do I do?" The words "police, open up," penetrated the air and came as an immense relief for the girls. Alan told them not to say a word. Swearing under his breath through gritted teeth, he said, "Shit, fucking hell, fuck." A succession of knocks followed. "Open up," said an officer outside. He wasn't opening the door. Charlene and Lisa feared the police would leave them stranded in this dirty apartment with their abductor. The knocking and calls continued for about 5 minutes. Too scared to call out, the girls sat waiting. Then they heard a door key and the sound of the front door being opened. The police officer spoke. "Good morning, sir. Are you Alan Hopkinson? We've had some complaints about you from some local girls." Alan retorted, "Really? I can't understand what they would complain about." The officer responded, "We would like you to come down the station and answer some questions, please, Mr. Hopkinson." "What now?" Alan said. "Yes, sir, we would prefer not to arrest you. It would be best if you came voluntarily." The girls heard a pause in the conversation. "Okay, can I just get a couple of things first? My tobacco and wallet." "Certainly, sir." The realization hit the girls that the police were not there for them. They had no idea. The officer waited at the door. While searching in the bedroom for his wallet, Alan casually called out, "Oh, by the way, I've got the two missing girls from Hastings in the front room." The policeman entered the property to see the girls huddled together on the bed. A grin spread across his face. "We've been looking for you." After 3 days and 3 nights, the girls were safe. They were separated and taken to different police stations. They were examined by doctors and nurses to assess their injuries and gather evidence. Before they were interviewed, they were allowed to put on fresh clothes their parents had brought them from home. The girls were desperate to see their families and knew they were in the same building. Charlene and Lisa were taken to child protection suites, which are large rooms filled with children's toys. The girls showed remarkable bravery, detailing the horrific events of their 3 days being held captive by Alan Hopkinson. DC Tina Burney was present throughout the interviews and said they suffered a catalogue of assaults and that the girls were fine to begin with and then became very distressed. They remembered everything that had happened in great detail. Later that day, news footage showed Charlene in a pink robe standing at the front door of her home with her father. Photographers and camera crews captured the relief on her father's face as he looked at his daughter. While Lisa and Charlene were being reunited with their families, detectives were interviewing Alan Hopkinson. Alan admitted to taking the girls, but denied assaulting them. In the interview, his whole demeanour suggested he had done nothing wrong, and as he spoke, he lacked any remorse for his actions. After a weekend of questioning, police changed tact. Instead of continuing with male detectives, they felt that Alan may act differently with a female. DC Burney was brought in. The interviews were spread over 4 days, and she later noted, "He preferred talking to women. I persuaded him to write down in detail what had happened." He is dangerous because he is charming, polite, and highly intelligent. He took me through all his fantasies and showed no emotion. He told me he was sorry for what happened, but I did not believe him. He seemed to think the children had encouraged him. He admitted he had been obsessed with children all his life, and I am sure he would offend again. Men like Hopkinson don't change. He doesn't want to change. The strangest thing about him was the way he treated me. At the end of it all, he must have known I was repulsed, but he stood up, shook my hand and said, "It's been a pleasure knowing you." In May 1999, Alan Hopkinson appeared at Lewis Crown Court to face charges of kidnap, 2 charges of false imprisonment, and 9 charges of assault. He also faced an additional charge of serious assault on a third girl from Eastbourne between January 1997 and January 1999, along with a further 11 counts of assault against 2 other girls, aged 10 and 11, in 1998. 10 other charges of assault would remain on file. Judge Richard Brown, who gave Alan 9 life sentences, said, "The public now has the right to demand that this court does everything in its power to ensure that you will never again be free to present a risk to young children." In Alan's defence, his barrister told the court, "Punishment should be tempered with rehabilitation. He is not like some paedophiles. He is not a violent man or a murderer." Detective Superintendent Jeremy Payne, who led the investigation, said the case had been the worst he had come across. He said Alan was a horrendously dangerous man who should never ever be released into society. Although Alan Hopkinson could be considered for parole after 7 years, Detective Superintendent Payne said, "It is my understanding he will only be considered for release when the authorities are totally satisfied that he doesn't pose a threat. Personally, I don't think that will ever happen." After the hearing, Lisa and Charlene's family welcomed the life sentence, but said their daughters were still traumatised. "She sometimes wakes up in the middle of the night screaming," said Lisa's father. "She's more withdrawn than before. It's been a very painful experience." So where are we now? Alan Hopkinson was denied parole in 2006. He is still currently in prison, however has been released on occasion under a special purpose license. Charlene and Lisa try to find some normality after their ordeal. Their close bond deteriorated, but at 17 they rekindled their friendship. Both women decided to go public with their story and wrote a book called Abducted in 2009. Their case encouraged schools to contact caregivers straight away if a child was absent without notification. They also supported a campaign called Sarah's Law, a child sex offender disclosure scheme in England and Wales, which allows anyone to formally ask the police if someone with access to a child has a record of child sex offences. This measure was called for after 8-year-old Sarah Payne was murdered by paedophile Roy Whiting in 2000. Charlene and Lisa, both now in their late 20s, each have a family of their own. Thank you for listening, and special thanks to our Patreon supporters. For more information, please visit theywalkamonguspodcast.com. If you would like to support the podcast and receive ad-free content and other extras, head to patreon.com/theywalkamongus. This week's podcast recommendation is Misconduct. Each week, Colleen and Eileen discuss the facts and theories surrounding unresolved crimes, wrongful convictions, and miscarriages of justice. Stick around for a trailer at the end of this episode. We've recently set up a Facebook group where you can discuss the cases featured in the show, your favourite podcasts, or anything in between. Just head over to Facebook and search for They Walk Among Us podcast. You can follow us on Twitter at @TWAU_podcast or follow us on Instagram under They Walk Among Us podcast.
This week we're discussing the case of the Grim Sleeper.
Tonight we are discussing the wrongful conviction of Richard Rosario.
We're going to talk about the disappearance of Evelyn Hernandez.
We will be discussing the case of the San Mateo Slasher.
Dive into the disappearance of Sneha Phillip.
The wrongful conviction and near execution of Clarence Brantley.
Welcome to Misconduct, a true crime podcast. I'm Eileen, and with me as always is Colleen.
Join us every Thursday as we discuss resolved and unresolved crimes, wrongful convictions, and miscarriages of justice. Find out more at misconductpodcast.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.